So, namaste, welcome to lesson two of the Dissolving the Ego course. And I'll start by saying that, as I said last week, and I'll say it every week, that you don't need to have mastered the previous week's lesson before we move on to this one. And the reason for that is because they all kind of fall fit together into something quite wonderful, really quite beautiful. So if you're feeling, hang on a minute, I don't feel like I've really got a handle on lesson one completely, that's totally normal and totally okay. And we're not trying to learn everything in this 4 weeks. We're just trying to learn the four basic skills that we can then practice moving forward in our life, in our awakening, all of that. So lesson one is tuning into the noumenon. And lesson two that we're going to do today is called deepening your recognition. But I kind of unofficially call lesson one learning to be what you are, and lesson two learning to stop being what you're not, or how to stop being what you're not, which is this separate sense of self. So we're going to look today about what happens for most of us as soon as we start to recognize the real self by any name that we're calling it, whether it's silence, stillness, noumenon, self, capital S, consciousness, presence, beingness, emptiness, nothingness, whatever, love, God, the divine. As soon as we start to recognize that, what usually happens is for most of us, and sometimes even before we start to recognize it, even when we want to recognize what we are but haven't, our karmic patterns start to come up in a bigger way. Sometimes the more we've realized and recognized what we really are, the worse our karmic patterns are, samskaras, our tendencies, I'm going to use all those words synonymously, the bits of our lives that just don't flow, the worse that they can get. So for me, this was an extraordinarily confusing time. I was really starting to get deep into my self-inquiry, to see, to really get intimate with the silence, to be able to recognize it all the time. It was just clearer and clearer that I was that silence and stillness and all of that. And yet the rest of my life began to fall apart and looked somewhat of a train wreck. So if that's happened or happening to you, today's lesson is right on track. Why does that happen when we're recognizing the oneness of what we really are? How does that, why does this other side, the what we are not, why does it seem to run rampant? Why is our mind most insane right before it goes quiet? Why is our life mostly experiencing lack and limitation right before fullness of abundance? And for me, when I really looked at this, why is this happening? Finally, from a non-judgmental place, because as these patterns began to get really, really bad, there was such a division between my life. My meditation was deep and peaceful and beautiful and blissful and all those things. And then the rest of my life was fearful, felt guilty the whole time, angry, everything. So only when I started to look non-judgmentally, why is that happening? What's going on here? Could I move beyond it? So I'd like you to begin to, that's why I start by saying that it's normal that that could be happening at this point. So you're not doing anything wrong. If perhaps you were moving beyond something and then finally, and it's come back up, flared back up. And that's because unbeknown to me, I was trying to solve and release my karmic patterns by dualistic thinking, thinking in two-ness. And this is the only way we're taught to do it, to deal with life situations, especially karmic patterns. So on one hand, I'm recognizing the oneness, the silence, the stillness. And then I'm trying to deal with these egoic patterns, these mind patterns, in two-ness. And that's why they were getting worse. Because life was trying to tell me, you're trying to deal with these in terms of duality, and you have to now deal with them in terms of non-duality, oneness. So I'm going to use a very simple tool to help explain this. I've been teaching this course now for 4 years nearly, and it's only just occurred to me. I always use this bowl and a glass, and it's only just occurred to me after 4 years that I don't have to actually fill it with water and therefore don't get wet, because every time I do this, I end up spilling water on myself. So if, you know, 4 years, but finally got there. So I'm going to use this tool to explain how we're thinking about things in duality, and then it'll help to, when you're looking at your own life, I'm going to go through this, and then I'm going to go through how to transcend dualistic thinking, release karmic patterns. And then I'll open it up and we'll have a good hour at least. And what I'd like you to do is, if you're having trouble with a karmic pattern, to bring it to me and we'll work through it and apply what we're going to say here. So this bowl represents the universe. So everything inside here is the universe. It's obviously finite and limited, but for the sake of visual tools, as good as we're going to get. So the universe is just one. It's not divided anywhere inside. It's completely all you, the noumenon. It is the self, the consciousness. It's undivided. It's pure. It's not ever divisible even. It's not that it's just undivided. It could never be divided. It's one. It's whole. It's complete. There is just one. And then we're going to use this glass to symbolize a human body. So here you are, first of all, this is you, just being yourself. And then a human body appears in you. And this is your body here. And obviously it's a bit bigger than it would be if this really were the universe. But suddenly, when there's a human body here, there seems to be an inside and an outside. Can you see that? Suddenly there seems to be me here inside the glass. This is me. And everything else is suddenly else, other, not me. So from there's just one and there's nothing else to suddenly there seems to be, and very, very convincingly, me here inside the glass, and everything else in the entire universe is else and other and not me. So suddenly from non-duality, duality seems to be born into an in here and out there. And unbeknown to me, and probably to yourself right now, we're trying to resolve our karmic pattern, still thinking in terms of in here and out there. And how we do this, we use something called cause and effect, or causality, that I'm going to go into in more detail. So just remembering that this in here, my life, me, and out there is not really two. It seems to be. The space inside the glass here is exactly the same as the space in the rest of the bowl. It just seems to be artificially divided. And for the sake of the analogy, the glass itself would be made of space if we could somehow make that happen, condensed space. So how do we sustain karmic patterns by dualistic thinking unknowingly? So let me take my own example. In my own life, I never had enough money coming in. It would come in unpredictable ways, and it would disappear, and it would run out frequently, and all kinds of, the whole theme of my whole life, my very first memory was intense fear, and lack of money was one of the ways that this showed up. So the cause and effect thinking is two-ness, cause and an effect. There's a cause and there's an effect. This is causality. So here, in terms of this karmic pattern, I'll show some more to illustrate. The cause was the lack of money outside, in my experience, was the cause, and the effect was how I feel in here. So not having enough money out there in my life made my body feel inside afraid. Okay, that was the cause and effect thinking. So like most of us, I tried to fix the outside world first. I tried to get more money, tried to build a bigger business, and the more money I had coming in, the worse the fear got. And ironically, the more money I had coming in, the more of it went out. And if you've ever experienced that, it's really very, very frustrating. And I did that for a long time. Then I got on the pathway and I flipped the cause and effect round. I said, well, if I can get super duper awakened enough in here, cause, the effect will be to allow in more money in the outside. The effect will be more money. So I flipped them on its head then. And that's where most of us find it's ourselves. By the time we get to a class like this, I'm going to put this down now before I drop it. So we flip the cause and effect over most times. Most of us come to our awakening thinking that if we can get awakened enough, it will solve this, 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 and this going on in our life. Because we've seen awakened beings that don't really have any problems, they don't have any lack. They certainly don't seem to be experiencing a lot of negative emotions, all of that kind of thing. So there's always a cause and there's always an effect. And what we're going to do later is take some of our karmic patterns here. Anybody that wants to share, when I ask for hands, we'll do as many as we can. And we'll look at where the cause and the effect is. So healing these karmic patterns is by taking the duality out of them, or recognizing that the cause and the effect must be the same thing. If there's only one thing in the entire universe, then the cause inside the glass and the effect outside the glass must be the same thing. So instead of trying to change the outside or change the inside, we can begin to question the idea inside that is reflecting outside as a lack. Or we can begin to contemplate. We use the contemplation technique, which I'll go through in a minute, to release the belief inside the glass. And that has to automatically, because it's the same thing outside, also simultaneously affect the outside. Just as if I stand in front of a glass mirror and I move slightly to the left, my reflection immediately moves. It doesn't take any time. It has to immediately move. The reflection out there has no choice but to move simultaneously because it doesn't exist independent of me. So plain, simple speaking terms, as I contemplate in here, my relationships, my job, my love life, whatever it is that I need to, and my awakening itself even will begin to reflect that. Because again, they are one, cause and effect, the same thing. We're so conditioned to believe in two things. And we continue to try to apply that thinking to resolve these problems. But you cannot solve a problem that's created in duality with duality. You have to transcend it to the place where the problem doesn't exist, where cause and effect are seen to be the same thing. And then the cause and the effect spontaneously go back into peace. What that looks like in our outer world is abundance, not running out of anything, more than enough time, energy, money, anything, resources, whatever we need inside, more than enough peace, joy, love, vitality, well-being, all of that. Our body is also outside. So here's one of the another example of my own karmic patterns. Again, to help illustrate, I'll go through a few. When I used to work cleaning houses for a living, I accidentally injured my shoulder really, really badly. And because of that, I couldn't work. And I said that this was the cause, and the way I was feeling angry and scared inside was the effect. So if I could heal my shoulder, then I wouldn't feel this way inside. Can you hear the cause and the effect? And then I got on the pathway. Well, I was on the pathway at that point, but I saw it clearer. I flipped it over and said, if I can release this lack thinking inside, then my shoulder will heal itself. Because my shoulder is a reflection, my body is a representation of what my thinking patterns are predominantly. So I want to make it clear, I'm not talking about law of attraction here. at all. I tried that many years ago and it made things worse. I'm sure it works for some people, but if you're interested in non-duality and truth, it'll very quickly come to a point where it doesn't work or it makes things worse. Why? Because it's saying, if I change myself in here, then something out there, I can draw something to me out there. Inherently, that's dualistic. There's two things there. Again, it's not wrong. It's simply in duality, and we're ready to move beyond that in this class. What I'm saying here is, as I release the cause, transmute the belief that is the cause, the effect also has to simultaneously change because they are one. They are not really two. So we're going to look at exactly where our life is showing us we're still thinking in duality and turn that around. One last example before I'll open it up to, or I'll talk about contemplation, then I'll open it up. Last example I want to give was somebody in my life who's very, very angry, an angry person. And when they were very hostile or aggressive or angry to me, there would be fear inside here and unworthiness as well, and anger too, probably the whole lot. So my thinking before was, if I can get this person to be nicer to me or get this person to go away or move very, very far away, I'll feel better inside. And again, you can see the cause and effect thinking. The cause is this person in my life. The effect is how I'm feeling in here. So when I began to transcend this, I had to look at the emotions. So the way to undo all of this is to look at the negative emotions we're feeling on a regular basis and to recognize that every karmic pattern is showing up in three ways at the same time: as a thought inside me, as an emotion, a negative emotion that comes from that thought, and then a physical manifestation. So something going wrong with my body, something going wrong with my finances, my career, my marriage, my whatever, any part of our life at all. Even this cause and effect thinking even works if we think that we're not awakened enough. Immediately, our mind and body has to reflect that totally. There's no option but to do that, because our mind and our body are outside to us from what we're talking about here. So the way to undo it is to look at the emotions, and I'll probably go through this several times, and it's on the lesson plan, so don't worry about that. The emotions that we feel on a regular basis, and ask that emotion what belief we're holding on to that we don't know about consciously, but is there? And then begin to question if that belief is true. So instead of not having enough money making me feel scared, I realized I was just scared, and the lack of money was a reflection, a mirror image of that. So when I asked why I was scared and just took away all the causes that I thought I saw, and actually sat with fear and asked it why, what did it want to say to me? If it had a mouth, fear, what would it say? And it came back to some kind of statement, some belief that said, I'm not safe, I'm in danger. Some very primal core instinctive beliefs inside all of us. I'm not safe, I'm in danger. Did the same thing with anger, and it said, I'm blocked, I can't get what I want or need to be happy, to be safe, to be loved, whatever. I can't get what I want, I'm blocked. All of these that I'm saying, there is a sheet, a PDF on the page where you find all everything you need for the Dissolve an Ego course. It's called Emotions and Their Hidden Beliefs. And I've gone through shame and apathy, guilt, anger, unworthiness, fear, all of the common emotions that you could feel, most of them I could think of at least. And just put an example of what it came up for with me when I looked at them myself, because I've had everything that you have right now. Shame says, I don't deserve to exist, or I don't deserve to be happy. Unworthiness says, I'm not good enough. We've had obviously anger. Rage is an extreme form of anger, very, very intense form of anger. Frustration says it's a mild form of anger, like irritation or impatience. They're all lesser forms of anger. Irritation says there's, you know, something in the way of what I want. It's not as compacted and as static as outright anger, where I really totally feel blocked. And but it's nonetheless present. Frustration says something is taking too long. What I want to happen, it's taking too long. It's coming, so it's not completely blocked, but it's taking too long for this to occur. So you can have a look at that sheet. You can ask me live in this class. You can send in questions anonymously too if you don't want to. One of the hardest places to see the cause and effect in this is in an intimate relationship, because the effect is right there in front of you in your face 24/7, or something going on with our body. It's easy for us to think, and it's very widely accepted across all humanity to say that this condition or disease in my body makes me feel this emotion. So the cause is the condition, the disease or the illness, and the effect is, so I've got this horrible diagnosis and I feel scared or angry or something like that. Here we have to kind of flip that on its head. There's anger or there's fear, and it's reflecting as this diagnosis, all of that. So you need to listen to this a few times, because I'm asking you to make a 180 on your thinking process. And that's why we have these recordings, of course, and the tools to help. The best example, though, is your own examples, which I'm going to ask you to bring in a minute. So how do we undo this? We find the emotion. Then we find the I statement, the belief, I am not safe, in terms of fear. And a belief is just an assumption that we haven't questioned yet. So if I don't question this assumption, I automatically have to experience the emotion and the effects in my life, whatever, whichever way it shows up. For me, this I'm not safe idea, I'm in danger, is very unconscious, because consciously I had a nice family, I had three kids at the time, you know, I had running a fairly successful business, and most of my life was spent in intense fear right from my very first memory. There was always this background fear, like something was about to go really, really wrong. So I would never have known that I didn't feel safe on some deep core egoic level until I really did this work, or that I still didn't feel good enough because I was achieving quite well at the time and all of that stuff. So it can be very opposite, these egoic beliefs, to what we're actually consciously thinking on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes that's why they take longer to come to the surface. So, and they can be very difficult to see in your life. That's why we have a body with emotions. They can tell us what we're still holding on to. To the extent that the intensity of the emotion, the amount of time we spend feeling it, really gives us a believometer of how much we're really invested, at least in the ego, of those things. And they're coming up now because we're starting to see, but I'm not this egoic structure. I'm not my mind. I'm not my beliefs. But just because we're seeing that doesn't mean that this automatically falls apart. It's very rare, extraordinarily rare, even for awakened beings, that somebody's seeing of their real nature is powerful enough to suddenly completely dissolve all of that. It's happened once or twice, as far as I'm aware. The rest of us have to have a clearer and clearer seeing, and then apply that there's only one in terms of this, like we're talking about here. Contemplation is the art of asking a question, is that really true, with a curiosity. I've experienced it's true, this belief I'm not safe. I've experienced it's this relationship ending, running out of this, having that happen, this whole thing with my body, whatever way it is that's happening for you. But just because we've experienced it doesn't mean it's ever been true. In fact, because we've experienced it means it can't be true, because there's a separate I experiencing it, two things. So we're going to draw a line under that and start again. All right, just the only evidence I've got that this belief is true, I'm not safe. I'm going to use this fear one all the way through as a running example. is all my countless experiences in the past. You know, if I ask my mind, is this belief true that I'm not safe? It will say, yes, of course it is. How stupid to even question it. Here's this. Do you remember this and this and this and this and this? And all these years of experiences of not feeling safe, not being able to get what I want or need to feel safe, variations on that theme. But as we really get into lesson two, we'll see, but I've had those experiences because this belief is there, not the other way around. Mine says, I'll feel safe when this stuff out there stops happening to my career, to my finances, to my relationship, whatever. Here we're flipping that around. When I begin to feel safe, then these experiences will stop happening. They have to. So, because again, they're one cause and effect to one. So I question the belief, is this really true? I'm not just going to keep looking at my experience and letting that dictate what I think and feel in here, because that goes around in this cause and effect or causality loop. I see the effect, I believe the cause, it goes around and around over and over again. And most of us know all too well how horrible that feels. The only way out of that permanently is to ask if this is really true. Is this actually true? I've always believed this. It's been right deep down inside the gut, the core of my egoic sense of self. These beliefs came into this lifetime with this body-mind vehicle. Because I've been trying to feel safe as a separate being, which is impossible, because I've been trying to feel worthy enough as a separate being, also impossible, because I've been trying to get what I want and need as a separate being, also impossible, happens temporarily at best, to feel safe and happy. Because I've been trying to feel loved, valued, respected, whatever it is that we're believing that we're not. So the way out of that is to question if this is true for the noumenon, the self. Is it really true I'm not safe, given what I know to be true now, and given that my experiences have been a reflection of this idea, and I can't really keep using them as evidence to keep justifying this feeling. That only when the emotion is released from contemplating the belief does also the outer world clear up. So there's a video on my YouTube channel in the core teachings playlist. There's four videos in that. One of them is contemplation, the art of asking a question to release beliefs. There is that PDF on there on the Dissolving the Ego course page, listing the common ideas behind beliefs behind certain emotions. But ask the emotion itself. We can do this live in a minute. And then sit with that question every time it comes up. Is that actually true? Is it really true I'm not good enough? I really would. And more of a sense of curiosity. I really would just like to actually know. I've always assumed, agreed, and then experienced. So if I don't assume and I actually ask and want to find out, then I can begin to move beyond it once and for all. For me, with certain things, fear, anger, I needed repeated contemplation 4, 5, 6 times when it came up in a big way. And eventually, your life is giving you so much evidence that it's not true that you find it very hard to believe. But even before that, the emotion has begun to dissipate. When it does come up, you go into automatic questioning when you remember, of course. As soon as you remember, oh, this is happening. I'm feeling this way, and this thing's happening because I'm believing I'm not safe. Let me question if that's really true. When we're questioning, we can do this just ad hoc whenever the emotion comes up or the experience happens, some trigger. You can also sit down like you would to meditate, also, and spend 10 minutes with this question notepad. Is this really true? And whatever answer comes up, whether it's a thought answer, an emotional answer, a sensation in the body, a sound in your environment, anything that happens at all is a type of answer. And we're just staying with the question. When we're asking a question, we cannot be believing a thought at the same time. It's literally impossible to believe I'm not safe and therefore experience it, and be asking, is that true at the same time? One's over here, one's over here. I wouldn't even be asking if it's true, if I'm sure it is over here. So you can't just stop believing these beliefs but you can question if they're true. And that begins to, every time you're asking, it's undoing your ability to believe that thought anymore. Belief is just a thought pathway that we believe so often that we don't even know we're doing it. How to unhook that, to question it. So going to the emotion first, and for some big patterns, there might be two or three or even four big emotions in that. For me, fear, anger, shame, and apathy were present in some of the biggest patterns that I'd had for such a long time, because I felt really unsafe, really angry that I couldn't get to feel safe by resolving them. Quite apathetic, there's no point even trying now because I've been trying for 40 years or whatever it is, and it's not going to get any better. But can we resolve these permanently once and for all while we're still feeling that the cause and effect thinking is true as a separate being? No, can't. Can only resolve this once and for all and finally put them to bed and live a happy, peaceful, abundant life effortlessly, continuously, once we've seen that the cause and the effect are one, once we've seen that the silence doesn't have any edges, that the silence is showing up as cause and effect. Silence, stillness, consciousness showing up as a belief and an emotion and a physical manifestation. So having said that, the best way to illustrate this is to do it live. So if anybody has any patterns we'd like to look at together, I'm going to give priority to people that haven't done the course before. So we'll go with Leonie first. We will come to you. We'll come to Gabrielle afterwards. Yeah. So Leonie, whenever you're ready.
Hi, Helen. Thank you.
Hi. How you doing?
As you know, like my thing is like definitely two is like fear and sadness.
Yeah.
And I think I feel like fear has just been there from the beginning. And then recently, just about sort of 3 days ago, I started to feel a lot of sadness and a lot of loss.
Yeah.
Around sounds strange, but not being in prison anymore.
Uh-huh.
And having that,
it doesn't sound strange because it's been very familiar and constant, and suddenly it's different, isn't it? So
So it's around like feeling the loss of the constant care,
having to suddenly manage all that again yourself, you know, is different, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what do you want to look at? Do you want to look at the sadness or the fear? Or they might both be happening at the same with the same pattern, but let's pick one just for clarity now and sake of time.
Okay. Sadness.
So cause and effect thinking says I'm sad because, you know, so you've illustrated that I'm suddenly in a very different environment. Mine says, this is why I'm sad. Can you see that kind of thinking? There's a reason behind it. And it's because I'm suddenly back at home and have a very different routine.
Yeah.
But if that effect is a reflection of the sadness, the idea behind the sadness, then let's just take away temporarily at least all the reasons why your mind says you're sad. Mm-hmm. And just be with that sadness. I know it's not easy to feel, but if you could just feel the sadness and it's there for no other reason at all, it's just there, what would it want to say to you? If it could make an I statement, if the sadness had a mouth, what would it say to you? Take your time with this. What does it really feel is true?
I think, hang on.
Take your time. Excuse me.
It's about being scared.
Yeah. So I'm sad because I'm scared, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think, it, like you said, it's almost like it's the fear and the sadness are connected.
Sometimes there's this deep sense of I want to be safe. I don't feel safe. I want to be safe. And I'm so tired of trying to be safe and it not working that I'm just generally, there's a sadness, or if it's gone even further, kind of deep apathy. Like there's no point in even trying to feel safe now. It's just not ever going to happen, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So can you see that the sadness is covering the fear?
Yeah, yeah.
So to me now, having seen that, it makes sense to go to the fear and yes. ask it what it wants to tell you. And I know I've said I'm in danger, I'm not safe, but it's worth doing this so that it comes from your own inner experience. What would the fear now want to say to you? And it might be exactly the same. It's just important to look and see what fear is saying or wants to say to you. You're doing really, really well. It's not easy to look at this stuff, is it? But
yeah, just that I'm not safe. I never, like it's saying like you never have been, so yeah.
So you can see hopefully that now that the experiences that your mind is using to justify that idea that you're not safe, mm-hmm. instead of those being evidence now, I've had all this stuff happen in my life that agrees with this idea I'm not safe. But now maybe can you see that all of that is a reflection of this idea I'm not safe, which is just totally rampant in the human consciousness. I've never met a person without this belief anywhere, unless they're already awakened, of course. But this idea that I'm not safe is part and parcel of being a separate being, isn't it? A small, limited, finite being that's going to come to an end at some point.
Yeah.
The way that that idea reflects for us is different for each one of us. So let's question this now together. Is it really true that you're not safe? And because mind is probably screaming straight away, of course it is. And that is one type of answer. It's a thought answer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No right or wrong answers here. It might also be positive thought answers. Of course, it's not true. I'm unsafe. I am the self. You know, mind might be giving you both of those polarities. Just telling us what's going on, what answers you're getting. We're not having any right or wrong answers. There's no shoulds or shouldn'ts here. If you hear a sound in your environment, we're going to call that an answer too. If somebody knocks on the door, if you get an itch on your foot, all of these are answers. It's a very different way of asking a question. We're not looking for one answer that's right. We're just letting go of that and seeing what happens. Is it really true? I'm not safe.
Yeah, there's just there's like a lot of emotion, like tears.
Yeah. These are emotional answers, aren't they? Also yeah. valid. Not pleasant, but also valid. We're not even going to label them as good or bad. They're just answers. They're no better or worse than the thought answers. We're just going to do your best to feel them as much as you can and gently reminding yourself of the question every now and again. Is it really true? I'm not safe. Seeing what happens when we stay with this question together. Only because we've always experienced it is true. We've assumed it's true. And we just want to know what it's like when we don't assume, when we question.
I feel I don't know how to explain it. Like I'm in a no place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of it's different, isn't it? This kind of answer is different because we're so used to just experiencing the thoughts and the emotions. So we're so used to zooming in the thought answers, right? And emotional answers. Can you see that's what we always do as human beings?
Yeah.
These are the most important answers. And then, of course, our experience agrees with that. So it goes around and around. So we're just staying, even if it feels like a no man's land, it feels weird. But let's just stay with the question anyway. Let's see what happens. Is it really true? I'm not safe. You're doing really well here. It's not easy to share it live on a group like this. So well done.
Yeah, like mine's doing its thing of yes and no.
Yeah.
And
it might also give you positive and negative emotional answers too. So sadness and fear, but also maybe some excitement that I'm finally contemplating. You know, it might give you both those as well. And we're just, whatever answer comes, we're staying with the question. Not because those answers are wrong. It's just that the longer I stay with the question, the better I start to feel. Can you sense that happening?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm not crying right now. So, yeah, that's good.
And my body, the longer I stayed with the question, my body began to relax just a little bit, just a tiny bit at first. Is it really true I'm not safe? I began to get a kind of experiential answer. My body just kind of went, oh, something like that. You know, it's very subtle at first.
It doesn't feel like there's a lot of, because there was just, well, this, it's been like that for about 3 days of just sort of
very tense
fuzziness. Yeah, and fuzzing, and it's not quite there now.
So just staying with this question, because it's a nice thing to do, that's all. I'm not trying to fix anything. Contemplation is just the art of asking a question because it feels nice. We're just going to stay with this question. Is it really true I'm not safe?
Yeah, my mind wants to come back in and go, oh, but you experienced that and this, but I'm just staying with the question.
So you just say, thank you very much for more mind answers, more thought answers. That's great. All are welcome. I'm going to stay with the question anyway. Can you feel that we're not really doing this for any other reason than just because it's nice not to be at the effect of an assumption? It's nice just to question, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Let's just stay with it for a few more minutes and see what happens. So is that negative emotion still there now?
No, like the tiniest bit, but not really, no.
And even if it's still there a tiny, tiny bit, can you see that in the questioning, you can't be grabbing a hold of that? It's different, that negative emotion then. It's not being taken personally. It's not happening to me. It's just happening, isn't it, inside the question?
Yeah. It's definitely less personal. And I knew, like, as soon as you started to talk about this today, I just was like, it's just because I've not practiced what I knew from before. And I had, you know, sort of a, you know, Leonie, all you need to do is just start doing it again, which is like, you know, the question in the,
It's totally okay. This cause and effect thinking, this dualistic thinking is so habitually ingrained in us, isn't it? Everything else in our life, except for awakening, we try to solve that type of thinking. And then we apply that to awakening. So it just takes a little while to consistently get in the habit of questioning. And then that questioning begins to feel really quite nice. So it's almost meditative in itself. And as you go deeper, spend 20 minutes with a question, you begin to feel really quite spaced out and nice and peaceful. And most importantly, can't take anything as a separate being personally. When you're asking a question, you cannot suffer, even if there's still thoughts, like you said, still negative emotions. You can't actually suffer. They're not the same thing, are they? Can you see?
Yes. That? Yeah. Yeah. I can. Yeah. I can feel that. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for being such a good example of that. Wonderful. Very brave. Okay, we'll go to Gabrielle. And if you guys have done it before, if you still want to leave your hands up, that's fine. I'll go to the other guys first and I'll come back to you after that. When you're ready, Gabrielle. Hi.
Hi, Helen.
Hi. How are you doing?
I don't know. This week's been really so helpful. And just hearing you talk, I just want to cry all the time. I have seen a lot this week. Leonie was really helpful going through that. I think just hearing you talk, I think it's really hit home how everything's been held still. Well, it was like that on retreat, seeing in two-ness.
Yeah. It's just such a habit, isn't it? That's why the illusion is so pervasive and seductive. Yeah.
And trying to deal with, so I really noticed just now, trying to deal with all this, what's opened up this week is the biggest big pit.
Take your time, it's okay. We're all here with you and we're all supporting you and encouraging you, and I've been right where you are right now, so.
I feel like I've looked at this my whole life. I think I said this on retreat. But what was really different this week was, whereas I've been trying to manage, use spiritual ideas, sit with it, it was just, when it opened up, it was like, oh my goodness, that's here. But it was really here, and there wasn't that separation that had been there before. This was yesterday, I think.
There's not this kind of I don't want to.
No,
it's a surrender to it in the end, isn't it? Because it's it's
and
here, and it's asking for me to feel it.
Yeah, and it actually brought up a well of compassion for my mum had massive depression, and I realised I'd spent my whole life just not wanting to feel depressed because my mother was. So that was kind of been a gift. And I've woken up every day for, I know my whole life with this terror, but also with this deep, deep, deep sadness, which seems since retreat to come out from a deeper place all the time.
So can you hold that in a positive light? It absolutely sucks to feel it, but it's coming up because it's showing you, here's where you can release this cause and effect thinking, this duality. It's coming up because your awakening is deepening, not in spite of it. That's the really important thing that I'd like everyone to hear. I'm feeling this right now because my awakening is succeeding, because mind will have it totally the other way around, won't it? Why is it still happening? Why is it still coming up? I thought I was getting somewhere, all of that type of thinking. So let's look at the sadness now. What does it want to tell you? What does it need to say?
Sadness just says, I'm so tired of doing this thing alone. I'm so tired of it all. I'm so tired of not being able to get this. It's got lots in it. I'm just tired
What does it want to get? What does it want to achieve?
It just wants to feel peaceful and relaxed.
So can you see then that the idea is deeply ingrained into that peace isn't already here? Peace isn't already right now.
Yeah.
So the more sadness I feel, the harder it's going to be for me to realize peace is already here, unless we question.
Yeah.
This is why sadness seems to replace the peace and peaceful, and then this sadness comes up and the peace goes. So let's ask this question together then. If it feels right, does that feel like the right question to you? Is it really true? Peace is absent. Something like that. What feels like?
Yes, something. Yeah, that I think so. Yeah, well, mine will say yes, it's really true.
Yeah.
Peace is absent.
So that's the first answer right there, mind answer, thought answer. Yeah. Because that's how it seems and it's okay. Yeah. So not saying that's right or wrong, it's just a thought answer. Let's stay with this question like we did before. Is it really true that peace is absent? Or that I have to get it, something like that.
Mind answer straight away that says, of course it's not.
Yeah. So it's giving you these answers, which are the ones that we use.
No, it just makes things odd.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt, you know, I was sitting there in a lot of fear, feeling desperately unworthy, and it seemed totally bonkers to even ask, is it true? You know, because it was so obviously true. Everything in my life was screaming it at me. But I knew the only way out of it was this. So I was pig-headed enough to stay with the question anyway. And thank goodness. So let's do that, even though it seems so obvious and maybe even insanity to ask the question.
Yeah. So is it really true?
Is peace actually absent?
Well, it's now saying I'm not sure about that.
A different type of thought answer. It's okay, isn't it?
Yeah,
we don't have to stop at any answer, and we're not rejecting any answer either. I'm just staying with the question no matter what happens here.
Just okay, because... well, there's anger,
yeah,
deep anger, I can feel that, emotional,
yeah,
in the body.
Not ignoring that, but also not picking it up. We don't have to do anything with it. There's anger, and we can stay with the question as well.
I want to pick it up. I can see that too. Something wants to go and investigate the anger now.
That's an, also another type of answer there, is it? Okay. Some kind of energetic movement.
Oh,
kind
yeah.
Of, yeah. So you could say, okay, that's another type of answer. We've had thoughts, we've had emotions. You're getting this kind of energetic answer now too.
Yeah.
This movement that wants to grab. And that's yeah. Okay, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just gently coming back to the question. Is it true peace is absent? You don't need to stop any of that happening. You just, okay, thanks for that answer. I'm going to stay with the question anyway.
There's like a feeling of just apathy about it all come up.
Yeah. It's also valid. It's another answer.
Yeah. And there's a big judgment come up about me doing this in front of everybody and looking stupid. There's another...
But you're doing amazing. You really are. Everyone that volunteers bravely like this is helping all of us, because the more examples we have, the better it is for everyone. So thank you for putting your hand up. And we're not denying that answer. We're just not going to let it be the answer.
Yeah.
Because that's the tendency we have. And that's the answer I'm going to listen to.
Yeah.
This anger or this judgment of myself or something. So coming back to the question, is it really true that peace is absent?
Well, the body feels a lot more peaceful already.
Yeah.
So there is a feeling of peace and relaxation.
Good, good. And this is where contemplation takes us. At first, it might take a little while when we're new to practicing it.
Yeah.
After a while, it'll be very, very quick. That no matter what thought and emotional and energetic answers are happening, I come to an experiential answer. So I haven't had an epiphany up here, okay, but my body is just feeling peace. So the experiential answer is yes. It's not true that peace is absent. Yes, peace is here right now.
It's
an experiential answer that can be happening that's more proof than we're going to use that as a better answer to continue with than thoughts.
Yeah, okay.
So we're not saying it's the right answer. It's just, here's an experiential answer right now that's contradicting what I think is true here. Which one am I going to go with here? So just staying with that question just for a minute more before we, or so. The experiential answer is a really felt body answer, isn't it? My body begins to relax. Yeah.
And there's a feeling of just openness again.
Yeah.
If I just ask that again, there's a feeling of much more lightness and openness.
Yeah. Yeah. And at some point we might come across the noumenon answer. So I'm asking, is this really true? There might just be this intense silence or vast space or nothingness, emptiness. Leone described it as this kind of weird place where nothing was, you know, like it should be. So again, come across the noumenon doesn't mean that's not the right answer either. It's not the best answer. It's just a different type of answer. It's the non-phenomenal answer. The only one doesn't make it better than the phenomenal answers. All of that can just be in our question, can't it? We're just staying with that.
Yeah, because there's just an empty feeling now, just whatever you call the noumenon, that's, well, whatever it is, it just feels an emptiness.
Deep experiential answer, where it might even seem weird that I even had to ask the question. It's like,
it feels a bit odd that I'm sat here doing this and was so anxious.
Because here, the assumption is so obviously not true. So it seems hard to remember that we might have been feeling it was 2 minutes ago.
Can I ask something about this? Because I think when I've tried it before, I get gripped onto wanting an answer and then latching on, and then it all goes a bit pear-shaped.
Yeah.
I'll watch this again. So really, it's not even wanting, there's tension in the body still, there's pain in the body still, but it's not even wanting that to go away, is it? Or
we're just saying all these types of answers are valid. Some the mind might label as pleasant or unpleasant, wanted or not wanted, good or bad.
Yeah.
The longer we stay with the question in terms of this particular time we're doing it, also the more often we question, it becomes a habit then to question. And those phenomenal answers, thoughts, emotions, body sensations, turn to what the mind would call positive wanted. So openness, space, peace.
Yeah.
Bliss, joy, all of the good things that we associate with awakening. And that happens naturally just by staying with the question.
Question becomes a habit, like anything else. Okay, thank you. When it gets to this place of just feeling like more peaceful and open, and why did I ask that question? Then the job's done for that moment.
Yeah. And just questioning every time it pops up, when you remember at least, you can't always write in that moment. But if you 2 hours has gone past and then you suddenly been lost in that idea that I'm not safe again or something.
Yeah.
Then I've been desperately trying to get peace for 2 hours. It's okay. I just, as soon as I realize, I'll come back to my question.
Yeah.
And sometimes you even eventually just remembering the question, quietness and peace. And questioning just becomes a way of life, because if I'm questioning one idea, I can't be believing any thought at all while I'm questioning.
Yeah, so the experience feels, just the insight then is then life's just a fluid moment-to-moment experience.
Yeah.
And I'm still wanting, and still in my mind, I've seen this so many times before, I'm still wanting an end result.
There is an end result in a way where the questioning has become automatic and habitual. Like now, if you could see the shape of my aura, it'd be like in a question mark or something, because I've done so much questioning. But I'm just kind of, my whole life is like that.
Yeah, I feel that.
And that's the openness you feel around any awakened being, because they're not buying any thoughts.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean thoughts are absent always, but they're unable. The first response then is to question rather than to believe and then question. That's the only difference that we're changing here in lesson two.
Yeah, brilliant.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Really good example, thank you. So what we'll do now is we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, let me just stop this recording. We'll start with...